Support for Here and Now comes from BetterHelp, committed to supporting mental health through therapy. Clients are matched with one of 25,000 therapists and can communicate via video, chat, or phone at betterhelp.com/public.
As that super red tide continues to foul Florida's southwest coast, scientists and environmental managers are searching for ways to fight it. Red tides, algae blooms are normal, but this one is killing fish, sea turtles, dolphins, manatees. It's shutting down businesses, keeping tourists away. It's a red tide on steroids. Richard Pierce is senior scientist and program manager for ecotoxicology at the Moat Marine Laboratory in Sarasota, Florida. Dr. Pierce, the bloom now stretches about 130 miles from the south end of Tampa Bay to the Marco Island area. How bad is it?
Well, this is one of the most severe that I've had in the 30-some years that I've been here at Moat Marine Laboratory. Bad, we can say, is how intensive is it? You know, how concentrated is the red tide? How much damage is it causing in the way of tons of fish kills, marine mammals, sea turtles, or how long it is? What's the distance along shore and offshore? And this one seems to be hitting all of those criteria quite well.
Yeah.
The red tide, as you know, is caused by a microscopic marine alga. It's a dinoflagellate, which is photosynthetic, so it gets its energy from the sun, but it does require, of course, all the nutrients. It's always out there in just a few cells per liter or per quart. But when it increases to thousands and millions, there's enough toxin from each cell to be a real problem. And that's the condition we have here now.
Yeah. Well, I mean, we're seeing stories, you know, SeaWorld turning into a homeless shelter for sea cows. These manatees who are, you know, manatees are also washing up dead. These are huge beasts. I mean, it's just a terrible thing for people to see.
They are, yes.
Yeah. So what are you thinking can possibly be done?
Well, there's not much we can do out in the Gulf of Mexico where it starts. It starts several miles offshore and generally on the bottom. What we're doing now is we're focusing more on the people along the coast where we might be able to do something about it. These residential canals, dead-end canals, where the flushing is very limited, they become just totally, what we would say, putrefied with dead fish and the algae in there. We're using a technique that we use to purify the water that we bring in for our aquarium, our seawater aquarium, and the same thing that's used for many swimming pools, and that is ozone. As your audience knows, ozone is 3 oxygen atoms.
Thank you for reminding us.
Okay.
Yes, go ahead.
Yes, the oxygen we breathe is diatomic, or 2 oxygen atoms, and it's very highly reactive. And if it gets around any cell or any organic matter, it immediately destroys it. So ozone is great for killing the organism, lysing the organism, and it's also good for destroying the toxins.
So how do you ensure that you don't kill too many, that you know, this is a part of nature as well?
Well, that's true, and that's why we're not going out into the Gulf of Mexico and spraying anything over acres of land. What we're looking at is not a natural condition. What we're looking at is an environment that has been totally altered because of the dead fish decaying. They use up all the oxygen, and it's not suitable for life, except maybe some, you know, bacteria and fungi and things. So we're looking at restoring a severely impacted, restricted flow area back into its normal natural condition.
So perhaps using ozone in the area?
Yes, what we do is we have some patented contactor units. We don't add ozone to the water. We bring the water from the canal into a enclosed contactor unit. The ozone then is injected under very high energy within there so that you get complete contact with the water. And then out the other end of the contactor unit goes the purified water back into the canal. At this point, we're in the experimental stage. We just do it at the dead end where we put a curtain barrier across the canal. And then we've got about 600,000 gallons of canal water that we tested last week. And we're still doing a lot of the analysis of the data, but it seems that it did work. It's encouraging. We learned a lot, and we'd like to go forward with this now.
Mm. Well, there's some hope there. I was doing some reading, and in way over my head here, but one of the articles said how a diatom, which is a single-celled alga, was also effective in fighting the algae in the red tide?
Well, diatoms are, yes, they're a different type of phytoplankton, and they compete with the red tide organism, which is dinoflagellate, for whatever nutrients are available. So if you have a lot of diatoms out there, they might outcompete the red tide. I don't know of any allelopathy, which would be chemical warfare between the two.
Mm. But could something like that, you know, an algae war, could that also get out of hand?
Well, yes. You have to be very careful that what you do doesn't make things worse than they already are. However, I mean, that's part of nature. We are working with some of the larger algae called macroalgae that exudes chemicals that actually inhibits the growth of the red tide organism. Mm. And that's something we're looking at. Maybe you could grow these algae around the ends of canals and in small embayment areas, which would actually inhibit the red tide from going in there in the first place.
Hmm. So you're trying to do things right now to mitigate this issue. But then there's the long-term thinking. We know Senator Bill Nelson has sponsored a bill that would set aside $100 million over 5 years for research. What do you need to know as a researcher? What is it you want explored?
Well, there's several areas. One is in order to know what we can do about the red tide, we have to understand it better. I mean, we've been studying it for the past 30 years, but we're studying it at a level that's primarily focused at public health and environmental health. How do we know where it is, where it's going? What effects does it have on people? What effects does it have on the environment? And that's essential. We have to do that. To go beyond that, we need to increase tremendously the monitoring program, but we also need to have new innovative sensing devices, much more like the National Weather Service has, to try to understand the fluid dynamics of the atmosphere. We have to understand the fluid dynamics of the Gulf of Mexico, but we also have to understand the biology and the ecology of this organism, and we also have to understand the chemistry of its interaction in its environment. So we got a far more complicated problem than the Weather Service, yet they have much more resources to study their area than the oceanographers do. Mm-hmm. And what Senator Nelson is doing is fantastic. We need more funding, which is the standard, you know, message of a scientist. We need more funding. But it's true. In order to mitigate the adverse effects, no, I don't think that we're going to be able to stop red tides from occurring. They are natural. They've been around before civilization. We're not causing it. The question is human activity enhancing it, causing it once it gets to the coastal region to be worse? But whether pollution coming to the coast causes red tide or not, we need to stop the pollution coming to the coast because it's causing the cyanobacteria problems and a lot of other degradation of the coastal environment anyway.
Yeah, but we understood that, for instance, fertilizer runoff is definitely adding to the problem.
No, we don't know that it is, actually.
Oh.
It's intuitive that one would think that as you add fertilizer to a water body that algae grows, and that's true, it does. But red tide is a very different creature than a lot of the coastal algae that's which in fresh or brackish water. And that's an area that really needs much more research.
Huh. Well, what about the increased temperatures?
Well, that's a possibility. I am not an ecologist, but I have read that the dinoflagellates probably will fare better in warmer temperatures than some of their competitors. So that could be. That could be a reason. Also, increased temperatures create stronger, maybe more frequent hurricanes, rain events, and that also may be contributing to the red tide events once they're initiated. So, again, these are hypotheses that we really need to test and do a lot more research on to get the complete answers.
Yeah. Again, your point is we need to find a way to fight the takeover of the waters right now by this. It's like a horror movie by this red tide gone berserk, but also research why it's happening.
Yes, yes, indeed, because if we have an enemy, the more we understand about it, the more we can fight it.
Yeah. Richard Pierce, senior scientist at the Moat Marine Lab in Sarasota, Florida. Dr. Pierce, thank you so much.
Well, thank you so much, Robin. I've enjoyed chatting with you.
Well, elsewhere in Manatee County in Florida, they're using oysters and clams to try to fight the red tide. Those oysters and clams tend to filter water. What is your area doing if you're down there fighting this red tide? Let us know at hearnow.org.